Welcome to Horse First with Lockie Phillips, a podcast about paying closer attention to the horse, to the work that we do with horses, and paying attention to what's actually happening in front of us. Not what looks good, not what we've been told looks good, because sometimes we slow down and sometimes we speed up, but we don't pretend. I'm Lockie Phillips. Let's begin. What if a horse doesn't need more training to solve their problem? What if the horse's problem is due to management? This is another uncomfortable truth that I've encountered in my work, that some horses don't need another training technique. They need a better life. Now, I know that that's not very popular of a thing to say, because all horse people have invested heavily in their horses, and no one gets out of horses having spent only a little bit of money. And a lot of us are very heavily invested in our training. We go to clinics, we buy the courses, we watch the videos, we discuss methods, we debate techniques. And then the horse develops a problem in the training, and our first question often becomes, how do I train this out of the horse? That's a reasonable question, but sometimes it's a misleading one, because sometimes the horse isn't expressing a training problem. They're expressing a living problem, and they're very different things. So imagine you lived in a room and food arrived at irregular intervals, or maybe even regular intervals. You had limited movement, your social life was restricted, and you experienced low-grade discomfort most days because you're limited in what you can do to take care of yourself. And then one day someone arrived and tried to improve your attitude. How much improvement do you think you'd make? Most horses spend 23 hours a day inside of management, and perhaps 1 hour a day in training. And yet we often obsess over that 1 hour and perhaps don't examine enough the other 23. I think that's backwards. And I would like to understand a horse's behavior. And in order to do that, I would like to understand a horse's life. Many years ago, I used to work periodically in an environment where the horses did not live very good lives. I saw happy horses there. I saw sad horses there. I saw confused horses there. I saw angry horses there. I saw calm horses there. I saw it all across the board. However, a happy horse living a sad life, I have to ask myself, how much happier could they have been, for example? Just because a horse looks happy in their current circumstance shouldn't necessarily mean we stop examining what we could do to improve it. But what I noticed in this environment is that the horses that were making the biggest improvements weren't necessarily receiving the best training. They were often receiving the best management. So they were the horses who were more frequently handled, taken out of their living scenario, taken for walks, medicated, fussed over, groomed, cared for, even getting out of the farm. These horses were the horses that were doing the best because they were getting more management, more movement. They had access to forage that was better when they got more movement. Therefore, they had more social contact, more predictability, more comforts in their life. And these horses changed before the training changed. In fact, usually the training didn't change at all. The training was exactly the same across the board. Pretty inconsistent, but the same across the board. But the horses who were managed more succeeded better. And that was a little inconvenient for the part of me that wanted training to be the answer to everything. A lot of horse trainers feel like, and ask me how I know this, a lot of us feel like if we can't solve it with training, then we're cheating somehow, or we've copped out, or we're bypassing our job. Because horse trainers really like one thing. They really like training horses. It's our hammer. And the trouble is that once you have a hammer, everything starts to look like a nail. And as far as I know, there's a professional role for medical care with a horse. It's called a vet. We know that. Professional role for hoof care with a horse. It's a farrier or a trimmer, hoof care provider. There's a professional role for training. It's a trainer or instructor. Is there a professional role for management? In terms of, there are grooms, there are people who manage barns, there are jobs for this, but is that a service you can buy that is taught? So is it taken seriously? And if it's not, why isn't it taken seriously? Let's imagine we're talking about a difficult to catch horse. The immediate response is often, I need a lesson on how to catch my horse. Maybe that's the truth. Maybe not. Maybe the horse lives alone. And maybe every interaction with people ends in work. Maybe that horse is associated being caught with discomfort. Or maybe that horse is wary of people in general because of what has happened to them in their lives. The behavior is real. The horse is hard to catch. But the behavior might not be the actual problem. It may just be the symptom of the problem. And we often like to spend enormous amounts of energy treating symptoms without really analyzing the root causes. I think the same thing can apply for so-called, quote-unquote, lazy horses. I've often heard people say, my horse is lazy. Okay, maybe your horse is lazy, or maybe your horse is tired or nutritionally compromised or uncomfortable or unwell or mentally exhausted or chronically undermotivated because nothing interesting ever happens. The label lazy breeds and creates certainty in a person and a certain type of certainty that reduces investigative efforts. Let me say that again. It breeds a type of certainty that can eliminate investigative attempts into what is really causing the problem. And when you investigate, you create understanding, and understanding is usually more useful than certainty. One of my favorite examples is a horse that is standing still. People become obsessed with a horse standing still. Still for them when they mount, for example. The horse moves at the mounting block, they fidget, they walk off, they paw, they look around, they won't settle. And immediately we begin training the horse to stand still. Okay? And that might be the solution. But maybe the horse has spent the entire day standing still. Maybe movement is exactly what their body needs right now, especially if they've been cooped up in a stall. Maybe asking for stillness at that moment is like asking somebody to sit quietly after they've been trapped on a long-haul flight. The horse's behavior may actually be reasonable in the context. It just isn't convenient. Something else I've seen, many horse people unknowingly ask training to compensate for a horse's loneliness. Horses live in social deprivation in various different ways. And then we wonder why the horse might be herd-bound or why they might be anxious when separated or when they do get access to a friend after years of solitude, they become clingy to that friend and they struggle to focus when that friend is nearby. Imagine removing the most meaningful human relationships from your life and then being criticized for wanting company. The behavior suddenly makes a whole lot more sense. Again, we're not excusing it. We're not avoiding dealing with it. We're just trying to understand it properly. Now, before someone believes that I'm a horse trainer that's trying to be post-training and saying that training doesn't matter, I still think training matters enormously. In fact, most of my days is spent directing people back to training now. I train horses. I teach training. I teach people how to train, and I love training. But training works best when it isn't fighting management on every single stride. A good trainer working against poor management is rowing upstream, and a horse with excellent management often appears remarkably trainable, even if naturally they might be complex. And that's not because the trainer is necessarily more brilliant than their peers, It's because the horse's needs are being met. So what do we need to look at first? If a horse presents with a behavioral issue, I tend to be fundamentally anti-band-aid in that moment, and I tend to examine five things before I start modifying behavior. Number one, movement. How much freedom to move does the horse have? And sometimes they're moving too much. And then when you ask for more movement in training, for a body that's really craving rest, you might be, again, rowing upstream. Forage. That's number two. Is the horse eating in a way that makes sense for the horse as a species? Number three, social contact. Does the horse have meaningful relationships of their own outside of a barrier between them and those relationships? Comfort. Are there physical factors influencing behavior? That's number four, comfort. Number five, predictability. Does life make sense to this horse? Or is everything happening to them without anything landing with clarity? Those five areas tend to solve more problems than most people realize. Not every problem, but many, sometimes even most of them. So one of the most liberating moments in our horsemanship journey is when we stop asking, how do I stop this behavior? And we start asking, what is this behavior trying to solve for the horse? That question changes it all. Now you're not fighting the horse and you're not rowing upstream against bad management. You're now investigating what's really happening. The horse becomes a source of information rather than a problem to be fixed. And horses tend to become much easier to work with when they feel understood. So I think the future of horsemanship is going to involve far more attention to management. Again, not because training isn't important, but because management is the environment training grows inside of. You can have the best seed in the world, but if the soil is poor, you won't reap a harvest. Horse people have spent generations improving the seed. The next frontier may be improving the soil. So if you're stuck right now, if your horse has a problem, before you buy another course, before you change methods or instructors, and before you start correcting behavior, take a long look at the horse's life, even if you think it's already very good. Not the horse's life in the hour that you're working with them, but the other 23, because sometimes the horse doesn't need more training. Sometimes the horse just needs some improvements in their life. And when their life improves, the rest will follow. Speaking of follow, thank you for following me along here. I appreciate you. Be good to yourselves. Take care, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now. If you would like to support this podcast, a simple way to do that is by leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. It will help more people to find these conversations, and it would mean a lot to me. Horse First with Lockie Phillips is distributed by the Believe Audio and Video Network. And just a gentle reminder, the content of this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and are not a substitute for professional, veterinary, or medical advice. I'm Lockie Phillips. Thank you for being here.